I write several fellows, and majority of them I don't get a reply from, so I really do appreciate this. I'll ask you, I don't know, probably a dozen questions, and if you would, just answer as long or as short as you want to. And anything you don't want to answer, just say no, or add anything you want to, if you would, please.
Okay. You can record this?
Yeah, is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, I'll send you, if you want, I'll send you a copy of the final product before I submit it to the magazine. That way you can...
What do you do with this?
It goes to a magazine called Sports Collectors Digest. It's a mainly baseball card-oriented publication, but the readership likes to read about some of them. I guess you're classified as an old-time ball player now. I sure don't think you're an old-time ball player because I remember when you were playing. But...
Well, I guess that's the category I fit in.
Yeah. And it'll appear, I guess probably 6 months after this, whatever their timetable calls for. And it's pretty much generic questions. I don't ask you anything that's going to cause anybody any upset, anyhow.
Okay.
Okay, back in 63, I think it was, and I had that right here in front of me. Yeah, I think you became the first pitcher in Major League history ever to spend a full season with a team and have fewer innings pitched than games appeared in. I talked to Bill Rigney a few months ago, and he commented on this, and he said that you just darn near got out every left-handed batter that he called upon you to get out. You had a really good year for him. How did you feel being used like that?
Well, at the time, I recall it after I didn't even realize it probably till after the season was nearly over that I was pitching that few innings in that many games. And I've always wondered at the time if it was a record. I'm not going back and reading the record books to see what had been done before, and it's not really a major significant item probably in terms of major league records, but I enjoyed it. I took it as a challenge, and I felt like I did my job. And I didn't have any problems with it. I never complained about innings, and I thought Bill used me very appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did the job. What did you think of him as a manager?
Beg your pardon?
What did you think of Bill Rigney as a manager?
I thought he was outstanding. I probably because he gave me the greatest opportunities that I had in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And used me in the way that I was probably best suited with the ability I had. I admired him. I thought he was a real people person. I thought he was well liked by all the players. I thought he handled both the regulars and the guys that weren't playing so much, and everybody knew their role. And I thought he was one of the finest managers I played for.
Good. I was always partial to him. I thought he did a good job with the talent he had over the years.
No question. And he was a real gentleman. And like I say, he treated everybody fairly, I thought. Did a really great job.
That's good. That's hard to say about a lot of fellows I know. In the minors, you had been a successful starter almost everywhere you'd been. You'd been an all-star. Well, All-Star 3 years, you were even an All-Star in the year the Angels finally called you up in 61. And then I remember you, I guess first I came across you. I lived out in Los Altos, California, as a boy, and you were with the Seals in 57, and I was, as far as I was concerned, the Seals were the greatest thing there ever was. You had a real good year with them. How did the transition to the bullpen suit you at first?
Well, looking back on it, I guess I wish that I would have made the transition sooner. Maybe I would have reached the major league sooner than I did and gotten in more years than I did. I found out, kind of by accident, that I could pitch almost every day, and a lot of guys can't. You know, when guys pitch one day and they can't pitch for two or three.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that if I pitched no more than, say, two or three innings, I could pitch again. can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
They're stiff and sore and whatnot for a day or two after they pitch. And I never had that problem. I liked relieving it after I got into it better than I did starting. And the reason that I liked it was I liked the challenge. But I liked the feeling that every day I came to the ballpark that I was probably going to be in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I wasn't in the game, my head had to be in it because I had to have myself mentally prepared for it. So that part of it I really liked. And like I say, looking back, I wish that I would have tried it sooner. I think I was suited to it, and probably more so than a starter, even though, as you indicated, I did have some success as a starter. When I came to the Angels in 61, I started some games and won, I don't know, three or four games, and I'm pretty sure all those were in starts.
Well, that was my next question. You had five starts, and you were 3-0 as a starter.
Yeah. I won my first Major League game there. I beat Kansas City and Chicago, the Chicago White Sox. I remember that, and those three wins, but I don't know who I beat in the other game or whether it was relief or start. But I think it was in the next spring that I really was, it was obvious that if I was going to make the team, it was going to be in the bullpen, and that's when I really found out that I could pitch a lot.
What kind of repertoire of pitches did you have?
I was a pretty generic pitcher. I could sneaky fast. I think my best asset was control. Left-handers, of course, notoriously wild, and I wasn't that wild. Average fastball with good control, and I threw a changeup, and then late in my career, I started throwing a slider, but I didn't throw it a lot, and of course a curveball. So mm-hmm. The four generic pitches, fastball, curveball, slider, and a change. But if I was going to get you out, it was going to be with a fastball to a spot.
Over the years, of course, left-handed pitchers are brought in to face left-handed hitters, obviously for the percentages. You had much better luck, though, than most left-handers versus left-handers. Would your ball have any particular movement?
Well, I don't know. I was, I'd say my control was pretty good. I could always pitch in and out, and I think that was my biggest asset. And I nowadays with computers and everything, they could tell you what the batting averages were, left-handers versus left-hander and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be interested to know what that was, but if that information is available. But I don't know. I just always felt comfortable against a left-hand hitter and had good luck against some pretty good ones.
Yep. Who was the toughest one batter on you in your time there?
Well, a lot of people have asked me that question, and there were a lot of good hitters in the league in those days, but I don't. There's no question that the best hitter, the toughest out for me in the American League in the years that I played there was Al Kaline. And one of the highlights of my career was facing Al Kaline with the bases loaded and one out. And I can't remember why Rigney left me in there in that kind of spot, but he hit a screaming line drive. The shortstop snagged and doubled somebody. Jim Fregosi doubled a guy off second base to end the inning. The only time, honest to God, I can remember getting him out.
Well, good. It's one more than a lot of guys do, I imagine. He hit a few guys over the years.
Out, and he ever hit a lot of home runs off me or anything, but big hits and doubles. And I faced him quite a bit because Norm Cash was on that team, and they hit back to back, and I can't remember who hit ahead of. I think Kaline hit third, Cash hit fourth, and I think there was a left-hander hit ahead of them. So I used to pitch against Detroit quite a bit.
It wasn't McAuliffe in front of Kaline.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. And then I'd come in, so I got to face Kaline probably more than I did a lot of right-handers. With Cash hitting behind him, they'd a lot of times leave me in because they knew that he'd be up next.
Mm-hmm. You said he was the best, the most effective against individual hitter or player you saw?
Oh, I don't, again, that's an easy question. Ted Williams, the greatest hitter I ever saw. I was a teammate of his in spring training a couple years, and then I did go north with the Red Sox in 1957, I think it was, the year I got sent out to San Francisco. But
didn't you start the season with them, with Boston?
Yeah, I was there. In those days, they used to carry a couple extra players for 30 days, and then 30 days after the season, they had to cut back to 25, and I was farmed out to San Francisco. But I got to observe him and watch him hit in a few games. One that stands out, we went out west to Arizona, and we played Cleveland. Herb Score was at his prime, and Herb pitched against us. I don't think he pitched the whole game, seven or eight innings, as I recall, but we had two hits off of him. Williams had both of them. One was a long home run, and the other was a line drive single, and he had about 14, 15 strikeouts. But just watching him in batting practice and the concentration he had and how every, in fact, one of my most cherished personal possessions is a newspaper article written by a guy in Sarasota Sun-Times or whatever it was, some newspaper down there. But we were, Ted Williams and myself and several other players that didn't travel on a spring training game away. He didn't go to many away anyway. But anyway, I was pitching batting practice to him, and Sammy White was catching, and we were working on him. In other words, he was, you know, we're calling pitches, and they put in a little bit of the dialogue, you know, and I'd make a nice pitch, he'd compliment me, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real keepsake of mine. I don't think he's the best natural just hitter, the best student of hitting that I've ever been around.
Who was the best pitcher you saw? It's hard if you weren't batting against him, obviously, but from observing, who was the best?
Yeah. Well, that's a very difficult question. Saw a lot of good pitchers. I guess as a teammate, a couple years there, although he wasn't as consistent as a lot of them, but for a couple years, Dean Chance with the Angels was an outstanding pitcher. It seemed like the better the competition, he was especially tough against the Yankees. He was really good, but I don't know. Whitey Ford, I saw Whitey quite a bit. You know, he was an outstanding pitcher. I saw Herb Score, of course, a little bit, not a whole lot, but he was a great pitcher with great stuff. I don't think he probably had the best arm, you know, when he had his good stuff. He maybe had the best arm that I saw. You know, those are a couple of that come to mind. Another one who was really, really tough and was consistently a good pitcher was Jim Cotton. He was at Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He was a tough pitcher. Great fielder and a great hitter. And, you know, he was just an all-around player for a pitcher. And, he could beat you more ways than one.
You had a pitcher with the Angels who looked like a couple of times that he was going to set the world on fire and come up hurt or something, Ken McBride.
Yeah, Ken McBride came to mind when you asked that question. Ken McBride's problem was that he was a sinker ball pitcher, and he had probably the best sinker ball I've ever seen, maybe outside of Mel Stottlemyre. But anyway, his problem was that he sometimes, if his mechanics were just perfect, he would lose his sinker, and it wouldn't be as good on some days as others, and I think that prevented him from maybe being as effective, you know, that might have been, but he was a fine pitcher. And when he had his sinker going, there wasn't anybody that could beat him. And I remember he used to work very hard between starts to be very careful when he was warming up or throwing on the side and things like that, not to get out of sync, you know, and keep his rhythm and his same release, because that sinker ball was his bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always thought he looked like he was on the verge of being something really special and never quite got there.
Yeah, I remember one of the funniest things that I it wasn't funny at the time, but rather ironic. He had a game. We were in Washington and playing the Senators, and they brought him out of the game and put a relief pitcher in. It wasn't me, because I was sitting on the bench when this happened. But he had a one-run lead, two men on, and one out. So they needed, there was two out. There was two out and two on, and I can't remember who went in. But anyway, there was a ground ball to the left side of the infield. The infielder picked the ball up through the second for a force out. It was a simple play, you know, a little snap throw from third base, as I recall. He threw it into right field. The runner kept on going to third. The outfielder picked the ball up in right field, threw it to third base. He overthrew third base. The ball bounced into our dugout and landed in Ken McBride's lap. And both runs scored. And he got the walk. So the last ball of the game, Kenny got up and had that ball in his hand, walked into the clubhouse. You know, usually it's in the hands of the winning pitcher.
Yeah.
You know how that goes. And here was poor Kenny sitting there watching two errors on the field, which made him a loser. Rather ironic.
Yes, that's a hard way to go, too. You mentioned Jim Cott's hitting a minute ago. You had three hits in your career, and you spaced them out pretty evenly.
Yeah.
You remember any of them?
He didn't let me bat much.
No. You remember any of these?
Oh, I remember one of them real well, because it was off of one of my idols, and that's I got a base hit by Brooks Robinson. He was playing so far off the line that he knew I couldn't pull the ball, and I hit a ball right by a third base down in the corner, and I managed to keep it to a single, but. I was off of Robin Roberts, and Robin Roberts is one of my idols. When I was a rookie, I came up with the Phillies and went north with them in whatever year it was, 55 or something. I pitched for the Phillies.
Yeah, 55.
And Robin Roberts is one of my idols, and I probably should have included him as one of the great pitchers, because even though I went to spring training with him twice, and went with North with him 1 year, and he was a great pitcher. So I would never forget that one. And my other favorite hit isn't in the book. I got a base hit off of Sandy Koufax in an exhibition game. He hung a curveball up over my hat, and I swung where he was throwing and got a hit. But I do remember the hit I got off of Robin Roberts.
You mentioned the Phillies. Is that who signed you originally?
Well, yes and no. I signed with an independent with the Spokane Indians, my hometown,
mm-hmm.
which was a Class B Western International League at the time. The second year that I was there, the Philadelphia Phillies came in with a working agreement with the Spokane Indians. Now, looking back on it, I'm pretty sure I know why they did it. There was another fellow by the name of Ed Boucher.
Mm-hmm.
He and I were high school buddies, and we signed together, kind of. I mean, we didn't sit there and sign the paper shoulder to shoulder, but we had a big impact on one another at the time. And so he signed first, and I signed about 4 days later.
I kind of
think the Phillies, the owner was kind of a Don Osborne signed me. that Ed and I were prospects, and so they came in with some kind of an agreement, probably to obtain our contract. So from that second year on, then at the end of that year, they officially purchased my contract, and I became property facilities at the end of the second year.
Boucher could hit the ball a long way, couldn't he?
Great natural hitter. Each step that he went up, whether it was from Little League to American Legion to high school to college, he was just a natural hitter. He could really thump the ball. He remains one of my good friends. I see him all about every other year. He lives in Chicago, but he has relatives out here in Spokane, and so he comes out. We have a good time.
I understand. From what I remember about him, the glove was a little inconvenience.
Yeah. He was a big boy, you know. He probably 220 to 230 pounds in that area. He was no gazelle, but he could hit the ball.
What were your feelings when you were, you were up and down for a couple, 3 years, or finally, maybe more than that, 5 or 6 years, and the Angels drafted you. Did you look upon this as an opportunity at that point?
Well, you know, I was realistic and mature enough, I didn't realize that, you know, I was a marginal major league player, and quite frankly, I never would have had an opportunity if it hadn't been for expansion to play up there for any length of time. I worked hard, and you know, I wanted to play up there, and I had a couple big disappointments in 1957 with the Red Sox. It was my biggest disappointment. I pitched more games than any other pitcher, and that I was relieving for them. I wish that if that would have worked out, maybe I would have found out that I could be a reliever earlier in my career. But I pitched in more games than any other pitcher in spring training, and I had an earned run average I think it was right at 3. And you know, I didn't think I had the club made, but I thought I'd have to do something wrong to get sent out when the season opened. I don't know if you've got the records in front of you, but I pitched one inning.
Yeah.
And was shipped to San Francisco. And
it was a good inning. Nobody got on base. You struck out 2?
Yeah, I pitched against Baltimore. I remember that. I don't remember who I faced, but and I felt real good about what I'd done. I was really shocked. But, you know, they had a lot of veterans on their pitching staff, and I guess, and of course, a left-hander in Fenway was something that you could do without. And at least they felt that way. That was really disappointing. And I guess my other disappointment was in 1965 with Cleveland. They sent me just to, that was my last major league stop. They sent me to Portland, July, I guess. Late July, maybe even early August, and we knew there was a player to go. I don't remember exactly why we were a player over, but Billy Moran, who was one of my close friends from the Angel years, knew that he had his bags all packed the day that they were going to make the cut. He had his suitcase, all his baseball equipment all packed up. And he knew he was leaving, and he called me and sent me to Portland.
You were not doing badly at all at that point.
No, I wasn't. In fact, Bertie Tevis was the manager. Bertie, I said, well, you know, what's the deal here? He says, oh, you drew the short straw, he said. Bye. Yeah, so that was I didn't qualify for the pension in spite of all the years that I've got in. I'm still about 60 days short of the pension.
They didn't make that retroactive for you guys either, did they, when they shortened it?
Yeah, well, I'd like them to do that someday, but they, you know, I thought about when I quit the game, I knew what I was, you know, my situation. I managed 2 years in the Northwest League out here, in the rookie league, but the thought of starting all over again, and at that time my kids were teenagers, most of them. And the thought of traveling around the country and riding buses and starting all over again didn't look too appealing. But, you know, now at this point, you wonder, you know, if you did the right thing. But I love what I'm doing now. So
you're coaching at high school?
Well, I coached for, about 16, 17 years. I'm in my 20th year. I started out as a high school teacher after I quit baseball. I became a high school teacher and coach, which I really have enjoyed just putting in my 20th year. My first 16 years, I coached baseball and I assisted in basketball. And then about 10 years ago, I became the athletic director at this high school, and that became a bigger and bigger job with the advent of girls' sports, and we moved the ninth grade in, and,
mm-hmm.
and so now I am the activity director in charge of athletics and all activities in a medium-sized high school here in Spokane.
Well, it's good that you can get something a lot of guys never do find, something they enjoy.
Yeah, well, I really enjoy it. I'm an associate scout for the Angels, which doesn't pay any money, but it gives me an excuse to tell my wife I'm going to go to a game. I recommend it. They signed a player here last year, so it'll be kind of fun to watch his progress.
Good. Is anybody else that you've recommended been signed?
No, he's the only one.
Okay.
First one. I've only been doing this a couple of years, and we had a Mexican boy come up here in this area, and as an exchange student. He was an outstanding athlete, and baseball was his best sport. And so I recommended him, and the Angels drafted him about the 23rd round or so. He's 18 years old.
What's his name?
Vladimir Alcaraz.
Vladimir Alcaraz, I'll look for it.
Yeah, he went to two Phoenix down in that rookie league, of course. And
mm-hmm.
He got there late. He had to go home for a while, and he got screwed up on his visa and his work permit and whatnot. So he was about a month late getting there. So he had 280 or so, but I think he only had maybe 50, 60 times at bat. And so I'm looking forward to this next year. He'll get a chance to start from the beginning and see how he does. Big, strong kid.
Let's wish him luck. It's going to take a lot of it.
Yeah, all right, yeah. Unusual for a Mexican boy. He's about 6'2", goes about 210 pounds.
Oh, that's a big kid.
Third baseman, maybe at first baseman, depending on his arm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I'll follow him, see what happens.
Yeah, might be a catcher.
Did you, from your career, did you save souvenirs, mementos?
Unfortunately, no, other than autographed baseballs. I have a collection of autographed baseballs from many of the teams that I played for. The only one I have that I think might be of some value, I have in 1964, I was traded to the Cardinals with Lou Brock.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was only there for about a month, and they sent me to farm me out to their AAA team. I refused to go and went home.